Oh, for crying out loud. Man, I missed you guys on Wednesday. Sorry. Man, life is just like that these days. I don't know what the hell's going on really with my life, but it's just busy. All kinds of stuff going on. And, sometimes I gotta skip the show. But I have been having a lot of fun lately amongst everything else going on. And, oh. I know, dang it. I did lose some of the guineas. Man, I'm telling you, I lost half of them. I got a comment in the chat. That's why I got a little distracted there. But I'm just saying, it isn't always easy. You think, what you're going to do, and stuff happens, man. You got to get on the ball quick. And I didn't. I don't know what happened. I do know what happened. I'm not going to bore you with the details. Basically, what happened is I'm an idiot, and you have to learn, you have to kind of figure things out, but you have to figure things out quickly with the little tiny chicks that just hatched like 2, 3 days ago. And, it's like we say with kids in dentistry, man, kids can crash fast. Like, that's why I don't use any sedation or conscious sedation or anything on kids. I don't even see kids. I don't like them. It's kind of true. Really, it's not the kids. Kids are awesome. Usually, it's freaking parents. Parents are terrible. Parents are literally terrible. I got an Eagle Cam on behind me, so when you get to the video, if you do, you can check that out there. This is Right on the Left Coast. It's a podcast about the Ravenwood Homestead we have here in Sheridan, Oregon. And, I just kind of like to share what we're doing. And so I guess part of that sharing will be, this whole guinea fowl thing. I think I finally have it figured out. We'll see after tonight. We will see after tonight because, I got him what? When did I get him? What's today? Saturday. Yeah, I picked him up yesterday. Jesus. That's kind of amazing. They hatch them and they ship them the same day. And the little bastards made it, and they all looked healthy, and they're all tiny and stuff, but leave it to me. Okay, I'm gonna tell you guys what happened. Guinea fowl are from Africa. That's where they originated from. They're used to really hot temperatures, right? And I live in Oregon, which is not really hot. And I put them in the regular brooder that we use for chicks, and we had, a heat lamp on, and we had a brooder table in there, and figured it would be plenty hot enough, right? But I went to sleep last night. Well, yeah, and then this morning, we had like a couple. I mean, they were cold. They were kind of like they weren't warm at all. And none of them looked that good. They were all face down with their wings out and their legs splayed behind them. And I was like, God dang it, man, what happened? So I came back and reread the raising keats instructions. And they say to have the brooder at 95 degrees. Hell, we were probably somewhere in the 70s. Yes, probably 80, probably 70 to 80. It's just too cold for them. They're little tiny bastards. They just were born a couple days ago. And I don't know. Maybe it didn't register to me that. Oh, I didn't switch my camera. Maybe it just didn't register to me that it said 95 degrees. Like, that should have like tipped me off. Like, holy hell, 95 degrees. Like, 95, man. Oh, Jesus. So a lot of them didn't make it. But the ones that I have now, I'm checking on them every 20 minutes. So When So I'll probably put some music on for a minute while I go check them in about 10 minutes here. So I just go in and I peep at them, you know, peep, 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 peep. And then I pick each one up and make sure it's able to walk and drink and eat and it feels warm. And so far, for about the past, let me see when I started doing that, noon. Yeah, so the past 6 hours, everything's been good. But, you know, yeah, right. Easy water and a heat lamp, good luck. No, that's no kidding. You know, I had to raise and lower the heat lamp till I got a good temperature where it didn't seem like it was frying them. I mean, 95 is pretty freaking warm, right? So, but you don't want to set everything on fire, melt stuff, or burn the birds or whatever. So I just sat there for a couple hours fussing with everything and watching their reaction until, you know, I finally got to a point where it looked like, okay, when they lay down, they're sleeping. They're not dying. And, you know, I just go pick each one up now. And I pick them up and make sure they can walk and that they're pecking at the food and they're getting a drink of water. And then I come back and I set a little timer on my watch for 20 minutes. So, yeah, things are going okay, I think. Yeah, that's not a bad job, cute little peeps. But it's no fun when they're dying, jeez. You know, and you feel bad. I mean, honestly, you feel bad. But, you know, life on the farm is different. I mean, you kind of get used to some of those losses because it happens. You know, stuff happens. You know, you go out in your chicken coop and you have like a chicken that's all torn to shreds because a coon was smart enough to defeat your security. And you're thinking, okay, now what the hell? How come for 2.5 years everything's been fine and all of a sudden a coon found its way in? Well, because you've had, you know, a piece of chicken wire fencing or whatever that has slowly kind of been bent out or pulled away or something, and Mr. Coon lets himself in and has a field day. Things happen, and it sucks. Especially, man, you know, I just can't imagine, honestly. You know, you think about people who really do this to survive. Like, this is the way they live. I, of course, have a job so I can go buy stuff if I need it. But, you know, we're really pushing toward independence, food independence anyway. And I just can't imagine the people who, you know, don't have a job and just do this 24/7 and to have some kind of catastrophe, like have your hen house raided by a fox or something and lose a couple of your producers, man. It takes you a while to replace them. Anyway, let me get through this introduction. We'll get on with the show. Hey, could y'all please post any social media sites that you are on that we are live here and have a live chat room? And don't forget Hal Anthony every Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern time, behind the woodshed with Hal Anthony. That dude loads 2 hours with more information than you will get from anywhere else. Guaranteed. And it's useful information. That guy's got a great brain on him. Really kind of does some thinking. And I love that in people. And I'm not kidding about the part of you won't get that kind of information anywhere else. I'm telling you, if you listen to enough radio shows, talk shows, even podcasts, you will hear people. It's almost like, I'll give you a good example. And I love this guy. I can't remember his name, but I love him. Oh, Ground Zero with Clyde Lewis, man. I love that guy. But if you listen at the top of every hour, so if you listen to his 3-hour show, at the top of each hour, he kind of does a 10, 15, 20-minute review of the same thing he's been talking about, right? And I'm thinking to myself, come on, man. I mean, I don't mean to be critical of him. I'm not kidding. I love him. Another guy with a really great brain. I'm not kidding. When I first started listening to Clyde Lewis, I was like, how in the hell does this guy put this much information together in 24 hours? Like, okay, I know he doesn't do it in 24 hours. Actually, I'm not 100% sure he doesn't do it in 24 hours. Because, I mean, I'm sure, like, maybe you'll have an idea, like, I'm going to talk about nuclear power. And so, okay, let's start preparing a show for nuclear power. And then they gather a bunch of information and facts and, you know, controversies, and they put it all together, and boom, they have a show. But the thing is, he does a show five nights a week, a three-hour show, and every day he's got to be ready for that 3 hours with whatever topics or topic he's going to cover. And I'm not kidding, that dude has some stats, man. And his brain, which kind of connects some parts for you or takes you into thinking new and different things. It's fantastic. But, as I was saying, Hal Anthony, man, does not repeat himself. He gets going and he goes. Like, you know, from one topic to the next. Sometimes they're linked, sometimes they're not. But he just keeps cruising through it. And he does link some stuff together for you, but he doesn't actually go back and review the first 15 minutes of whatever, you know, the first hour. I mean, you get 2 hours of information that is new and different, and you probably haven't heard it before. Every Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Check out Hal Anthony. Okay, so I told you about the guineas, so we're going to kind of move on here a little bit. I do have to kind of keep an eye on the clock, even though I have a timer on my Fitbit on my hand that will go off here in a second, a few minutes. So I might as well tell you this. This kind of sucks, man. And I'm telling you, I really thank God. Hang on, I got a cough. Oh, I'm so glad I'm not taking lisinopril so much anymore. Jeez, I don't have nearly the cough I did. Anyway, I was going to say this. I thank God that I've been instilled with a pretty optimistic outlook on life. Because, man, there's some stuff that just, it really could be, I could understand people getting depressed. I'm not kidding. I really could. And I don't really complain that much about anything. I could tell you stories, but, you know, I don't think we have time for it. Although I do love telling stories. But I will tell you this, because I'm going to go check the chicks in a minute, which means I also got to find some music. Let's see here. I'll look in a minute. Okay, because this is what I wanted to tell you. I had a physical two weeks ago. And I did the blood work, finally. And I got a chest x-ray, finally. And I went and saw the orthopedic surgeon who worked on my knee right before my heart attack. Because in 2019, I had... Goodness, what kind of magnets do they use for magnet fishing? Man, those are some big ones. Yeah, you have to get them out. You can take some out of a microwave, but that isn't even big enough. Anyway, let me get back to this. So I went to the orthopedic surgeon who fixed my knee, because in 2019, both my shoulders were pretty much toast. But it was kind of fortunate because my right and left shoulders had calcific tendonitis, which just means you have calcium forming on the tendons. So this is not a major surgery. I mean, it's kind of a big deal. You know, it's, you know, you got to be put to sleep and stuff, but really not like, it's not a serious damage, just like, you know, get rid of the calcium and, you know, heal the inflammation and off you go. Well, so I had the right shoulder done in 2019. And then I was like, you know what? The left shoulder isn't that bad. Let's just leave it. Okay, so here it is, 2023, 4 years later. And I like damn near can't use my left arm. Like there's certain things I cannot do. Like I can't reach behind my back with my left arm, like put my thumb against my back. Can't do it. So I see the orthopedic surgeon Wednesday. And he said, you know, they did some imaging and he goes, hey, he goes, well, you don't have that calcific tendonitis in your left shoulder anymore. And I was like, oh, you know, I'm like, oh, something else is coming. He goes, so he said, it's more than likely a torn rotator cuff. I'm like, God dang it, man. Okay, so I'm going to go get some imaging, you know, the MRI thing on my left shoulder, and we're going to see how much it's torn and then where to go from there. But God dang, man. So here's the deal. Like it used to be, you know, you're jumping your bicycle over a ramp to get some air and impress somebody, and the bike hits the ground and the fork breaks off and you go over the handlebars and you get some stitches or you break your collarbone and you're like, ah, crap, I broke my collarbone. Yeah, I got to be, you know, laid up for a couple of weeks until this heals. Now it's like, you know, just stuff comes out of the blue. Like you didn't do anything. Just all of a sudden, you freaking, you know, rotator cuff is torn. That's not all of a sudden. It's been going on for years. But God dang it, like at least I could have done something to actually injure it. But no, it's just like you just wear out the parts, man. Okay, let's pick some music. What, you know what, I heard something earlier. I'm going to look at it real quick. I'm going to go find it. I think this is muted, so you'll just have to stick with me a minute while I find it. Oh, that was a good one. No. Oh, here it is. All right, let me get this kind of set up just right. I think it was right around. Let's see.
So if I've done anything, it's just, you know, it's just been there and loving on you and just showing you his love. So,
thank you.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You. Thank you, Ricky.
So I want you to sing this song before I start tearing
up
now.
Okay.
And,
all right. I'm going
to
let this
And
play.
I want y'all to
go
sing along with
us
because I know
back.
You know this song and it's a beautiful song.
All right, Barry.
I can think of younger days when living for my life was everything a man could want to be. I can never see tomorrow. No one said a word about the sorrow. Broken heart, how can you stop the rain from falling down?
How can you stop the sun from shining?
What makes the world go round? How can you mend this broken man? How can a loser ever win?
Please help me mend my broken heart
and let me live again. La, 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 la. I can still feel the breeze that rustles through the trees and misty memories. Days gone by, I could never see tomorrow. No one said a word about the sorrow. How can you mend a broken heart? How can you stop the rain from falling down? How can you stop the sun from shining? What makes the world go round? And how can you mend this broken man? How can a loser ever win?
Please help me mend my broken heart
and let me live again.
Please help me mend my broken heart
and let me live again. Da 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 da.
Well, they're on their feet, folks, at radio and listening all around the world on WSM Online. You should have been here. Barry Gibb.
Thank you all so much. Thank you. Thank you.
Dreams.
For crying out loud. Okay, so where were we? Let's get off of, oh, I know. We'll go back to the Eagle Cam. That's kind of cool. While I'm chatting, I'll be chatting for a minute. Let's see. Where, there it is. All right, thank you. And the chicks are great. I think I'm on to something. I think these remainders are going to make it. So, whew, a little bit of a relief. Hey, and before I get into what I want to talk about today, which is basically just living a country life and why, I just want to say I've been having a lot of fun lately. One of my favorite games started working again on a computer on Linux, because I'm a Linux guy, and I will not run Windows, which is stupid and stubborn, and also my choice. But that has been fun. I get maybe an hour every couple days and get on there. God dang, that's a fun game. EVE Online is what it's called. And yeah. You're weak. Oh. That kind of gives me some concern. Anyway. Oh, that's okay. Go rest. For Linux. Yeah. So I wrote a little piece here. I'm just going to basically read it and share it with you and stop and do whatever whenever, add some comments along the way. But I was thinking earlier this week, like, why do people choose to live in the country? And I know, people make choices all the time. Some people don't have a choice. You know, I get that. I was actually looking at another piece of property here. This is kind of amazing. I didn't expect to talk about this, but this piece of property is just a quarter mile away. It's 4.8 acres. It's a two-bedroom, two-bath, manufactured home, in pretty good shape. It has one big steel building that works as a shop and a garage for tractors or whatever. And a pump house. That thing is listed for $499,000, man. And I had told my wife I was thinking about buying it. So we were looking into it. And when I saw that price tag, I'm just like, there's no way. There's no way. And then I started thinking, holy crap, man. You know what my property would be valued at? Yeah, I know, Cowboy Tech. I know, man. It's on the top of the hill for sure. But I know I'm not bragging in any way. My property has like seven buildings, has an implement building, a barn, a chicken coop, a lean-to, a woodshed, two houses. I was thinking, holy hell, this probably, and trust me, we bought this place for $150,000, I don't know, 20-something years ago. I bet it would list for close to $1 million. It would have to. I mean, if that two-bedroom, two-bath is listing for $499,000, and I really just wanted it for the acreage to put some cows on, so that would be kind of stupid to pay $500,000 for a piece of property, put a couple cows on. Yeah, I know, location, gee, many Christmas, but I feel sorry for the people who are buying it. There is a order, there's a pending purchase on it, so. But anyway, so why would people choose to live in the country? And, you know, I've lived in the city. When I was in dental school, I lived in an apartment right in the heart of Portland. And I hated it, man. I didn't hate it like actively every day, God, this sucks. But, man, there's a whole different atmosphere in the city. Like, just being in the city and having, I don't know, neighbors that are just on the other side of a wall and or upstairs or downstairs. I mean, we had kids above us who would run across the floor and you could hear every little pitter-patter of their feet. And, you know, neighbors on either side, and if anybody's arguing or there's a loud party, or you can't do anything about it. I mean, that's part of living in the city is you kind of, well, you either accept those things or you start a big thing about it. But people do live in the city, and I get it, man. There's some benefits to living in the city. I mean, everything is right there. Like, you don't have to travel far to get your car fixed, to get groceries, to get clothing, to get some kind of services or whatever. And, you know, let me just read my notes. Some people are cut out for city living or living in a neighborhood. The city provides access to everything. Grocery stores where you can buy basically anything for your home. You can pick up a day's worth or a week or month's worth of food. Everything for your bathroom needs, hygiene essentials, even some hardware and auto parts you can pick up at grocery stores. There are malls available for specialty stores or brand name clothing and choices to suit every budget. Generally there's public transportation that makes it easy to get around, easy in quotes, because also, I mean, you're putting your life in, well, other people's hands if you're not real smart about it. I hid my chat box. Yeah, I know. Oh, no kidding. There are public services like police, fire, rescue, medics, trash pickup, libraries, water, and power. There are auto repair facilities, tow services, car washes. I mean, basically, everything you need is available in the city. There are even some areas, like Sun City in Arizona, that are set up so you never have to leave your little area. Like, each little kind of subdivision has its own grocery store and services like auto parts and auto repair. And, you know, it's like these little kind of community within the city where you don't have to cross, you know, any major roads or anything. Hell, and down there, a lot of people drive golf carts, electric golf carts everywhere. And there's some of them are pretty fancy, too. Because it was set up that way. It was originally designed so that people could get everything really close to home. Now, why they did that, I don't know. And, you know, you're hearing today talks in some other countries about, you know, the 15-minute city. Like, you know, everything is within 15 minutes and you don't ever have to leave. Matter of fact, they're encouraging you not to leave. This goes back to the whole fossil fuel argument, which, by the way, let me just step outside of my article here for a second. Oregon just recorded the coldest March on record. Damn you, global warming. That's why we had to change it to climate change. So that, you know, when these anomalies happen, well, you know, it's just a glitch. The coldest March on record. But yeah, keep on punishing people for using fossil fuels, which is what this whole 15-minute city is about, or 15-mile. I don't know, is it 15 minutes or 15 miles? But each little, you know, area you're going to be confined to. And I've actually heard some gossip, I guess, or hearsay that you would need a permit to go, you know, to go across the bridge to some other area. Because they don't want you to drive. They don't want you getting out and about. And then, of course, they're going to force everybody in those little areas to use their little public transportation system. So, you know, you're just stuck in a, you know, evil little cycle. Hell, here in Oregon, the dumbest damn thing, Oregon's horrible. We have the biggest idiots by far of any politicians. No, there's a couple that are, well, stupider for sure. But like the majority of our politicians are just flat crazy, stupid bastards. So this is Oregon's brilliant idea, is that they're going to put a toll on the two major highways, Interstate 205 and Interstate 5, because they want to cut down on people driving. Now, who do you think, honestly, who do you think that's going to hurt? Of course, you know, all the public transportation vehicles will pass right on through and keep on going. No fees necessary. So you just get on the bus and, you know, away you go, and you don't have to pay that fee, and you don't get to drive your car. And who's it going to hurt? You know, is it going to hurt the professionals? Is it going to hurt, you know, all the office people? I mean, some of the office people, yeah, it's going to hurt. It's not going to hurt the rich. It's going to hurt people who are already struggling. So you're going to, you know, kind of impose an additional tax on them to keep them from driving their cars. And you know what? I mean, I just had this thought. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe we need more poor people to understand the government frickin' hates you. You live in the city. Now we're going to control you. We're going to control everything about you. We're going to cut off those two major interstates, basically, because we're going to charge you $1.50 every time you use it. So $3 a day, in addition to the increased gas prices you're paying on your fossil-fueled vehicle. Now, if you would only plug in, they'll probably, now there you go, there'll probably be some reduced fee if you're an electric vehicle, right? But yeah, so people who are already struggling with child care costs and food costs and gas prices, and they're barely making it, or probably not, in some cases, people aren't even making it anymore. Man, I see people's grocery, I look at our grocery, hell, Rochelle and I even react sometimes, like we saw something the other day, it was like $14? Like, how could that be $14? Vinny paid $8 a gallon somewhere. Holy crap, man. But that's what I'm saying. Like, people don't have that kind of money. And so the government just sees that as another opportunity. Hey, all we got to do is take away a few more dollars of these people's money, and we'll get them on public transportation, and they won't be driving their cars. Now, will the government do that? Will the governor of Oregon, will she drive a, you know, an electric vehicle? Did she put solar panels on the governor's mansion? No. You know what she did? She put a diesel-powered generator on the governor's mansion, so in case the power goes out, she'll have power. Man, and I hope people start waking up, you know, and get off of this idea that you're going to vote. Oh, sorry, hang on. That you're going to vote to punish the rich somehow by increasing taxes or increasing whatever, and you think you're doing a good thing. And really, it's just going to come back on you. The government doesn't care about any single one of us. I mean, think about it. Oregon's hugest priority is the homeless crisis. You know how few people, even though it's a huge number in Oregon, you know how few people are homeless in Oregon? But that's the government's main priority. And as a matter of fact, it's every city in Oregon's main priority, it seems like. And every little city and every little town makes it a huge priority. They don't care about you. They care about something that doesn't, isn't even important. If they cared about you, they would make it easier for businesses to come in. They would protect those businesses from riots. They would encourage businesses to thrive instead of, you know, putting their boot on the throat of every single business and holding them hostage for, you know, government, environment, and social agendas. So I don't know, man. Some people live in cities. I understand it, but God dang it, man. The government loves you to live in the city, definitely, because they can control you in the city. Now, those of us that live in the country, let me see, did I cover everything there? Yeah. Now, living in the country is definitely different. I suppose there are some that just pick a piece of property in the country, like, oh, we want to live in the country, and then they spend their time maintaining that property in some beautiful and pristine way. And I've seen those places. They're beautiful. I mean, they really are beautiful. As a matter of fact, Rochelle's brother and his wife had this beautiful piece of property. God, I can't believe, has it been 20 minutes already? Are you kidding me? Yeah, it has. I'm going to finish this because Rochelle said she would check, and I will check in a minute. Anyway, they had a beautiful piece of property. They put in this gigantic fountain and had beautiful koi fish and an environment that invited wildlife to come and visit, but not like tear things up. They didn't have chickens. They didn't have animals. They just had this beautiful piece of property on a beautiful hill in basically Hillsboro, Oregon, up on a Bald Peak Mountain. Beautiful place. You know, and there's some people that do that, and I get that. You know, I understand. It's just like having a piece of property away from people. You don't have somebody living on the other side of the wall that you have in your house. You literally have a piece of property with a little bit of barrier, and I get that. You know, it's understandable. It's kind of like living in a park. And Rochelle and I actually think that a lot of Ravenwood Homestead here. Like, when we think about going somewhere to spend some time, we're like, why? Man, the place we have right here, it's kind of like a park, and it's like our own little park, and we know where everything is, and we can just be private and quiet and enjoy our time, so we don't need to go anywhere. There are times, though, man, there's times, you know, talking about living in the city, there are times when I think to myself, God, I'd like to go get some Greek food, or I'd like to go get some Indian food, or I'd like to go get some Thai food, and just go sit and enjoy a meal. But, I mean, those times are fewer and far between these days. I have a feeling now, after having done this for a few decades, that the government definitely does not like people who are independent or strive to be. Now, not so much the local sheriffs. Funny, as I sit here writing this, there are 8 deer in the north pasture, the chickens are roaming, and guinea fowl keets have arrived and need tending to. So not so much local sheriffs or the local politicians. Mostly, out in the sticks, you fall under county laws and not so much any local jurisdiction. In other words, like the city, people aren't going to come up and ask you to do one thing or another because you're outside the city limits. You're in the county. So you basically have one kind of set of laws that apply to you. Even though I have a Sheridan zip code, really, Sheridan doesn't bother me for much of anything. The Sheridan Fire Department comes up, you know, like when I had my heart attack, they came up. We actually pay for a service, you know, so we don't have to, oh my goodness, yeah, time flies. We pay for a service so we don't have additional costs. Like if they come up to check on us or come up to take us to the, you know, hospital or whatever, we prepay for that service so it doesn't hurt as much. And especially as you get older, and I'm not kidding, living in the country too, this is another thing you have to keep in mind. Like, emergency services are, I mean, you have emergency services, but they're not very close. No matter which one you need, police, fire, rescue, whatever, they're not that close. It's going to take a while. So, you know, a lot of people that live in the country, and I always encourage everybody, learn some first aid, man. Think about how you would respond to an emergency of any kind, because it can happen. I mean, it can happen anywhere, but when you're in the country, it's going to be a while. You know, so when you get hurt, man, you better know what to do to make yourself comfortable for 15, 20, 30 minutes. Or to save your life, you know, stop some bleeding or whatever. Yeah, you know, villages and little towns, I think, are nice. Like, Sheridan's probably pretty nice. The only problem is, okay, so in Sheridan, you know, it has fire department, which is, you know, ambulance and fire combined, medics and fire combined. And, you know, they can get to anybody in town pretty damn quickly unless they're on a call somewhere, man, because there's not like 50 people manning that volunteer fire department. There's like 8. And if they get called out, there's more than that, I'm sure. But if they get called out somewhere, you know, like the local highway is one of the worst freaking highways in the world. People crashing all the time, head-on crashes on Highway 18. And from McMinnville to Grand Ronde, I mean, they cover that whole area and probably almost to Dallas and I don't know how far north they would go. There, you can't really go north from here. Maybe Hebo, kind of toward that area. But yeah, they could be 30 minutes away from their station, and you're 11 minutes the other way from the station. It could be a while, man, before somebody got to you. So it's important, you know, to know how to respond to a fire, or to a collision, or to an accident, or to your own, you know, lifestyle, you know, activities that have led to whatever, you know, heart issue you may have had. So why do we live this way? I mean, the animals need to be fed daily and sometimes multiple times a day, like right now, these little keets, these guinea fowl keets. I'm spending, you know, every 20 minutes, I was spending like 5 minutes to make sure every single one of them drank and every single one of them ate and every single one of them stood and walked, and they were either, you know, they were in whichever zone of temperature that they felt comfortable with. You know, so you have to be willing and able to help these critters out. I mean, if I was working these last few days, I don't know if other people would have figured out what needed to be done, you know, as quickly. I mean, I was really paying attention, and there's a reason for that, because I want them to survive. They're, you know, I bought them for a reason, to perform a function on the property here, to eat ticks and to eat fleas and to provide us with food. So I want them to survive. You know, the grandkids, it's just a chore to them. So, you know, if you're invested in whatever it is, you got to spend time to make sure things happen and animals survive. And, you know, you have to do this if you have a job. You have to do it on your own time. You have to do it before or after your work or at lunchtime if you're close enough, which fortunately I am, but I never do anything at lunchtime. I come home and eat and drink and usually take my vitamins and that's it. And, you know, all the other things get done before or after work. So back to the animals, their living areas need to be kept clean and dry. I mean, very few animals actually love standing around in the mud. There are some, but few. Not only that, but for hygiene and food safety issues, if you're raising animals for food, you want them to be clean, right? I mean, part of raising or growing your own food is that you know where it has been and how it has been treated. We don't pee or poop in our garden. I just mention that because I've seen the vegetables being harvested out in the gigantic fields where I can barely even see an outhouse nearby. Now, if I worked in that field, and I mean manually harvesting vegetables, would I walk like a mile to the outhouse? I'm thinking not. Of course, I wouldn't deface the vegetables I was going to pick either, but there are diseases that will remain in that dirt until next season. Have you ever wondered how E. coli gets in veggies? It's a gut bacterium, for crying out loud. Anyway, back to the homestead. Yeah, gardens need to be secured so those beautiful deer don't eat all of my hard work and, well, everybody else's hard work. Oh, and it isn't necessarily hard work if it is enjoyable. There is seldom any instant gratification living this life. Of course, I am not sure you get that in the cities either. So you have to put up fencing or maintain fencing you have. You have to maintain buildings, pens and corrals, and any farm machinery you may have. It really is a daily routine, along with working your normal job if you need one to support the farm. Funny thing is, I don't think anyone who does this complains, or I should say sincerely complains about it. When I do talk to neighbors, we always talk about whatever the current problems are. Always offer to help each other, and then generally go on our way, each knowing that if the other needs help, they will ask. I do. So what is the benefit? Well, many of us feel some sense of security in living this life. I don't think any of us take it for granted. We know at any time it could be taken, or at least lost by in some fashion. We can go to the city less often. During the COVID swindle, Rochelle and I would say we were going into the zombie land. It was a joke, but we often felt that way before and after the COVID swindle, mainly because over the last decade or two, the cities have started to buy into less law enforcement. And here in Oregon, they, the city officials, have taken on this idea that more services for the homeless will make that situation better. And, well, as you might have guessed, it hasn't. People flood to Oregon to take advantage of all the services the cities offer. We have food and know how to preserve food. We generally put food up, by that I mean store it, for hard times or generally winter. Another thing is, at least here at Ravenwood, we are always looking for new ways to preserve food, new foods to grow, new ways to increase yield, or maybe even learn about local wild foods. I wouldn't really say it is easy, but it is sure fun, educational, and satisfying. So that's kind of my take on living in the city or living in the country. We have learned so much. And it's so amazing, you know, that Crystal, our daughter, and Sheck, her husband, and now Whitney, Crystal's friend from high school, they all are on board. And they all are bringing in new things because everybody has their own kind of desires, I guess. You know, they have their own food preferences, you know, or things that they're interested in. Like somebody is really interested in mushrooms, so they know how to identify certain kinds of mushrooms for whatever, you know, for medicinal purposes, just for eating, for, you know, just trying out different mushrooms and seeing how they are, you know. Some people like to gather wild foods. They like to go fishing. They like to go to the coast. And, living on land equals exercise. That's no kidding. That is no kidding. As a matter of fact, I didn't do my cardio yet today, and I was like, I don't know if I'm going to really do it. I have been up and down, you know, every 20 minutes. Now, I know that's not the right kind of exercise. You know, for your heart, you want to do 20 minimum minutes of medium activity, and I do 30 to 40. I'll probably do it while my video is uploading tonight. I don't know. But, oh, and we did kind of fertilize the entire property today, Rochelle and I. Oh, and that was really fun, too, because, you know, when you store equipment for a year, You need to spend a little time, I think, making sure it works before you load it up with like 40 pounds of fertilizer and think you're going to go out and fertilize 5 acres. So, yeah, it was like the Keystone Cops trying to get this thing going today. And we finally got it going. It was really nice. Wow, look at that. What is that on the screen? Oh, I hope you guys get to see that. It's pretty crazy. I think it's fireflies. I really think it is. That'd be cool. Yeah, no kidding. You got to get the cobwebs off the equipment. You got to lube it up. You got to make sure all the parts work and nothing broke on it. And then you have to make sure the mounting parts are in good working order, that there's nothing going to fall off while you're freaking using it. Oh, hey, so I have like 3 minutes left. Yeah, three plus. I wanted to, you really do. You have to be ready, man. You can't just, you know, I'm so fortunate. Rochelle's kind of crazy about little, oh, thanks, Vinny. I'll see you later. Okay, take it easy, man. Rochelle's kind of crazy about small engine maintenance and not leaving gas in them all winter long, which is kind of amazing. And so she makes sure that they're nice and clean and they're put up the right way. That's kind of amazing, right? Not me. She does it, and she makes sure that they're all ready to go. So generally, when we pull a piece of equipment out to use it, you know, we clean out the other stuff that was in there to help keep it clean, put some gas in it or gas and oil mixture, and boom, start it up and go to work. Yeah, she's always been that way, real kind of preventative maintenance freak, man. She has done a great job, and always has. So that's why things work here, is because of her. Oh, I just provide funds. That's what I do. Hey, I wanted to share this one article with you. I'm going to bring it up real quick. This is the craziest thing. So when I read this, it says 80%. Oh, I'm going to roll it down so it's on the screen. 80% of retail receipts contain toxic substances. And I was thinking to myself, what I was thinking is, so these receipts are making people sick. You know, like people are looking at their receipts and go, oh, God, I can't afford that. You know, food's getting so expensive. That's not it at all, man. These receipts literally have toxins on them. So, it says the Ecology Center recently published the results of a 2022 study of chemical composition of retail receipts in the United States. It found that 80% of the receipts contained toxic substances. And that was, so it was crazy, and these are all the things that I guess people have been worried about lately. Bisphenols, most commonly BPA or BPS, were found in 80% of the receipts tested, a 13% decrease from the center's findings in 2017. So at least somebody saw something about it and, you know, has done something about it, you know, since 2017. All right. So, remember to catch me every Wednesday and Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern. Well, when I'm doing the show, I'm going to try and make that Wednesday show more often. But you never know. I mean, you just never know, man. It's getting busy. It's time to get crops in the ground and all that kind of stuff. So, but you can catch me Wednesdays and Saturdays. You can download the podcast, you know, on your favorite podcast. Catch me on BitChute or Rumble. And don't forget, Hal Anthony tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Thanks.